From the studios of WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. The North Carolina State Auditor's Office recently released an investigative report examining Cape Fear Community College's finances. This came after months of media scrutiny and the sudden resignation of the college president during a January board meeting. And while the spending of government officials is still under a microscope locally and nationally, investigations are also ramping up at the state level. Beth Wood, North Carolina State Auditor, is with us today to answer questions about her findings regarding the local community college and what the taxpayer, the citizen, needs to understand about transparency and accountability for public officials. Beth Wood is serving her second term as state auditor after first winning election in 2008. She is also the first female to hold that office. Beth Wood, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you for having me, Rachel. It's great to be here.
Great to have you here. And we're inviting you to join the conversation. Do you have a question for North Carolina State Auditor Beth Wood? If so, give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can also send your comments or questions to coastline@whqr.org or tweet us at @CoastlineHQR. Beth Wood, an investigative report is a different animal, as we know, from a routine audit. So let's set the stage here for the Cape Fear Community College investigative publication. When was the last routine audit there, and what triggered this investigation?
The community colleges are audited every other year. And so the routine financial statement audit, I believe, was done for the fiscal year ended 2014. And an investigation, though, is more pointed, if you will. There are certain allegations, and when you are performing an investigation, you're going in and looking at those allegations. You are trying to substantiate those allegations. Certainly, if another issue arises, you may look at that too, but your scope is a lot more narrowed in an investigation than it is in a financial statement audit. And of course, in a financial statement audit, there are standards that you follow. There are certain things that you're going to look at. In an investigation, like I said, it's a very narrow scope around the allegations that were made.
And why is it that you've said before that it's usually citizen tips that lead to discoveries like some of the ones that you made in this case? But why is it that the routine financial audit every other year wouldn't have revealed what was revealed in this investigative situation? Were the findings too small? Was the money immaterial in terms of a regular audit?
Those are a couple of the issues. You're exactly right. We are handed in a routine financial statement audit a set of financial statements. We're looking at the balance sheet. We're looking at the income statement and the cash flow and notes. And then the users of those financial statements want to know, before I depend on this financial information, is it accurate? And our opinion basically will say those financial statements are accurate, plus or minus some number. We're calling them fairly stated. And so you're right. Most organizations, no organization can really afford, if you looked at every transaction, every dollar. So you're looking at where there's the highest risk for misstatements of financial information, whether it's an error or it's fraud, but you're looking at the highest risk areas, which would be the largest dollars. And you're right, for these types of issues, the magnitude of the dollars were not large enough to be picked up in a normal routine financial statement audit.
And so what were the key findings in this particular report?
For this report, we found that the former community college president had given raises and promotions and raises that went with those promotions that covered more than $50,000. And of course, those raises are recurring. So that's $50,000 that's gone to raises for people that will be spent for these people every year. But these raises and these promotions and the hiring of a vice president of a particular division had not been approved by the school board, the community college board. So now you've made these raises, you've made these commitments, you're going to spend this money, so you've pulled $50,000 away from the board, who's responsible for the budget, who's responsible to decide how the monies are going to be spent. And so he didn't get the proper approval for the promotions, the raises, and the hiring. Then we found that the community college had this vending fund, and again, the monies were supposed to be used for the business of the college, to be used for the students of the college.
And what is a vending fund?
It's just the vending machines. Mm-hmm. It's where they collect monies out of those vending machines. And so the former president ended up paying for leased vehicle, $24,000 for himself. And that was never a part of his agreement to come to work there.
That wasn't part of his compensation package.
Exactly. And then he has spent another $7,000 on a marketing group to help him get rid of some negative media. He spent money on his wife's tickets to go to a conference, airline tickets, an upgrade to her tickets, meals for her, registration for the conference. And so he spent upgrades for his own travel. So it was money that was not necessarily to promote the business of the community college. And then the last issue that we found is that he did drive a car that was leased by the community college, and that sort of was not transparent. But on top of that, he received the IRS mileage rate for reimbursement for all the miles he drove, as opposed to just getting reimbursed for the gas he put into a leased car.
And that last point in your report, you actually, with each finding, you cite the statute or the principle that explains why it's a violation. And you actually cited something there regarding out-of-pocket expenses, actual out-of-pocket expenses, versus getting reimbursed over that amount. And I just found it sort of staggering that that even had to be put into writing when you're talking about public money. I mean, isn't that sort of a really? Why was that particular point justified in that way?
Well, when you say justified in that way?
Well, there was a particular, and I can probably find it, but there was, you said there's not actually a state statute in your explanation
about reimbursement for a state leased vehicle. But you're exactly right. You like to think that you don't have to have a law and a rule for sort of the common sense things. Now, there is an underlying that the dollars spent will be for a public use, that will be for the use for the business of the community college. And then you turn around and find out that you're over reimbursing him. His out-of-pocket expenses was just for the gas he put into the car. The community college paid for the lease, which covers the maintenance, the tires, and whatever. So again, you would think, being a good steward, that just the common sense would kick in that you weren't owed any more money than the out-of-pocket expenses.
And in terms of this report, the amount of money that you determined that was either misspent or misappropriated turned out to be about how much altogether?
Probably close to $100,000 when you look at the $50,000+ in salaries that were given that did not have board approval. And then you look at the monies that were inappropriately used by the former president himself, it comes to about probably $75,000 that was inappropriately spent.
And to a lot of taxpayers, that sounds like a lot of money. It doesn't sound immaterial.
I would agree with that statement. We like to say, imagine how many taxpayers you have to line up to make up that $75,000 in their hard-earned tax dollars to pay for this misappropriations.
In your report, you've made it very clear that these were connected to the actions of the former president of the community college. But is there anyone else that should be held accountable here?
Absolutely. Your board of trustees, and again, I commend them for calling us in and bringing this to our attention, but it is the responsibility of the Board of Trustees to be watching the expenditures of the community college, to be making sure that when they sign off on a budget, that things haven't been put into a budget or hidden in a budget that they're not aware of, like those raises. And then making sure that they have the policies and procedures in place to make sure that all the monies running through that community college are spent on the business and the benefit of the community college and the struggling students and the students that are trying to get their education at that community college.
And you received a response from the Board of Trustees that essentially agreed with all of your conclusions, and they also laid out a plan.
They did agree with our conclusions, and they have laid out plans for making sure that all presidents are trained, that all of the policies and procedures that went lacking in this situation have been put into place, and that they're working, and to make sure that they are taking the steps they need to oversee the expenditures of that college, which is their responsibility.
One of your recommendations was that the community college consult with legal counsel to see if they should pursue the recovery of some of these funds. Is that something that your office will be following up on, or will you be following up on their plan to make sure they're in compliance with what they said they'd do?
We certainly will be looking at, are they in compliance? We will be back in there to perform the routine financial statement audit, and that's a great opportunity to just take a look to see if the policies and procedures have been put in place, and then to quickly test to make sure that they're actually being followed.
And when does that audit process begin, that routine audit process?
I apologize. Because we are auditing some community colleges one year and some another, I'm not sure which schedule they're on. But if they were audited in 2015, then it'll be 2017 when we're back in there.
Okay, you're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. We're talking with North Carolina State Auditor Beth Wood. If you'd like to ask a question or make a comment, give us a call at 910-343-1138 or email coastline@whqr.org. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is Coastline. Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. And with me in the studio today, Beth Wood, North Carolina State Auditor. She recently published an investigative report on former Cape Fear Community College President Ted Spring and some of the financial dealings that came into question. Today, we're learning more about how the auditor's office works and why citizens play such a key role in some of these investigations. If you have a question for Beth Wood, now is your chance to ask her. You can give us a call at 910-343-1138, send an email to coastline@whqr.org, or tweet us at coastlinehqr. And we will get back to some questions around Cape Fear Community College, but we heard from David and Donna, who are asking, why does Beth Wood's department not audit North Carolina churches who take blatantly partisan positions, as First Baptist in Charlotte did in last year's election? Why don't they and others lose their nonprofit status?
The nonprofit status comes from the federal government, and certainly there's criteria that they have to meet to be a nonprofit. But the jurisdiction of the North Carolina State Auditor's Office falls with organizations that receive state appropriations, your tax dollars, state monies, or federal grant monies, federal tax dollars coming to the state of North Carolina in the form of a grant and passing through the state of North Carolina. So if it doesn't fall into a state appropriations or federal grants that pass through the state of North Carolina, the organization is not within my jurisdiction to go and take a look at.
And you have said that citizens do play a key role in a lot of the investigations that get launched from your office. How does that happen?
You're exactly right. Some of the best tips that we receive are from citizens of North Carolina, employees of organizations where things are not happening like they should. We have an app for that. So there's an application that you can download and send us allegations or issues that you might see where monies may be misappropriated. We also have a hotline phone that you can call in and remain anonymous. And it's on our website, www.ncauditor.net. Or you can also email us, and we will respond in any of those three ways. But I think it's important for citizens to recognize that if you do call in issues or allegations or suspect of misappropriations, you will remain anonymous.
Okay, so if there is an employee that thinks his or her boss might be doing something funny with the checkbook, even if those allegations turn out to not be substantiated, that person is still safe. They can, the whistleblowers will be protected.
That is absolutely correct. We have had situations where we would interview the person who wanted to talk with us and several others, and then nobody would ever know who it was that brought the allegation to our attention. So we have a way to keep people anonymous.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking with North Carolina State Auditor Beth Wood. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org or tweet us at coastlinehqr. And Anne from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
I'm very glad she's addressing this subject. It's very informative. I have taught at Cape Fear Community College, and I absolutely love teaching at a community college. I have also taught at the university, as I have a doctorate. But my preference really is the community college. My question is this: how many students might have had their in-state tuition paid with this money which was wrongly taken by Ted Spring?
Beth Wood?
It's hard to say, not knowing what the awards would have been. But again, you're looking at approximately $75,000 that was could have been used toward students and their supplies or the administration. So I'm not sure that this was really financial aid, that this could have ever gone to tuition for a child or a student at Cape Fear. It's more in the administration of the community college and the operations.
Anne, thanks so much. Anne, are you still there?
Yeah, I just want to clarify. I don't mean technically categories. I'm just speaking directly. It's very hard for students to afford to go to school now, and this would pay for. If she could tell me what the tuition, in-state tuition is per year or per semester for a student now, we can calculate how many students might have been able to go to school.
I'm not sure.
I apologize, Anne. I do not know that
okay.
figure.
All right, thanks.
I'm so sorry.
Yes. That's right, thanks.
Thank you so much for your call, Anne. And we had an anonymous caller who just left a message. And this person says, do any of the people who received these unauthorized raises continue to receive the new salaries? Or do they have to give that money back, I assume? If they continue the new salaries, do they continue to benefit in other ways? As in, will their retirement packages be higher as well, Beth Wood?
Yes, if the raises continue, and I have no reason to believe that those raises were taken back, if those raises continue, you're exactly right in that their retirement package will be higher than if they did not receive those raises. So you're exactly on target.
So in other words, some of these decisions that were made, the roughly $48,000 that went to unauthorized raises and promotions, that money is forever allocated.
That's right.
In a certain direction.
It's recurring. And then if there are raises down the line, they're computed based on that salary that we're talking about right now. So again, it is recurring until the person no longer works there. And then their retirement package is reflected of those raises.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking with North Carolina State Auditor Beth Wood. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call at 910-343-1138 or send us an email at coastline@whqr.org. And Beth Wood, there's another issue around Cape Fear Community College that has been in the news quite a bit lately. One news organization, the local NBC affiliate, I believe it is, WECT, has been asking for details of the performance contracts for some of the performers who will be part of the first season at the Humanities and Fine Arts Center, which is part of Cape Fear Community College's campus. It's part of their operation. And the conflict comes in when you have high-profile performers. For example, Liza Minnelli is one of them. And there is a confidentiality agreement with her. So the college would be violating a confidentiality agreement if they chose to make the details of her contract public. And yet, because this is a public institution, a government-funded organization, there isn't really a law in place that would protect the details of those contracts. Can you speak to that issue?
I would do better if I was had my lawyer sitting beside me, because there are contracts with government organizations that receive funding. And again, depending on where that funding's coming from to pay for those contracts with someone like Liza Minnelli, and the confidentiality clauses, I mean, if the organization signed the contract, I have to believe that it is on the up and up, and that there's not, the details of that contract will not be made public. Now, it's not the kind of thing that my office couldn't go and take a look at. Nothing is off limits to the Office of the State Auditor. But for the general public, as far as transparency, again, if they've got that confidentiality agreement in that contract, then I'm pretty confident that the details of that contract will not be made public.
Is there something that the community college could do with your office to satisfy the questions around the financial responsibility of the operation with the Humanities and Fine Arts Center? In other words, could your office go in and do an investigation, keep the results, keep the details of those contracts private, and still say it looks like it's on the up and up or not?
We absolutely can. There are from time to time issues that we consider sensitive issues that cannot be for in the case of information technology. So for reasons that that would be harmful, breaches could occur. So there are some times that we have the ability to give the results of our audits to those that it's necessary, but the general public wouldn't see it, but it's in a way that something can be done or something can be taken care of. So you're exactly right. We could come in and take a look, issue a sensitive letter, and then still say, on the surface, to the average citizen or the readers that, yes, everything was done on the up and up, and there's no violation of grant monies or college policy or state policy or state law. You're exactly right.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking with North Carolina State Auditor Beth Wood, partly about the recent investigative report that she produced on Cape Fear Community College's former president, Ted Spring, and some of his financial dealings. If you'd like to ask her a question, give us a call at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. And we had someone call earlier, once again, just left a message. We get these very covert phone calls when you're in the studio with us, Beth Wood. John says, the money that the president took, some of it was just raises, not taken. I think he's trying to clarify a point that...
And he's right. What we use the... When you looking at clarifying in that perspective, some of the money was given in raises and some of the money was inappropriately spent. But you add it together, and it's still a total that is not available for the board members to spend on the operations of the community college. But he's exactly right that not all the money was taken by or used by or spent by the former college president personally. But again, there is a total amount of money that is not available to the community college to be spent on the operations of that college.
And going back to the Humanities and Fine Arts Center, if you were to take a look at the operations, if you were to take a look at those contracts, what would constitute something that wasn't savory for a government-funded institution? I mean, you do these performance audits, and I want to get into those just in a minute because I think this might fall under that rubric of, is this a good use, a reasonable use of government money? But in this case, where you're talking about high-profile entertainers coming to what has been a smaller market, this is, you know, and we wouldn't have seen Liza Minnelli here before. At what point is it not appropriate?
First thing that we would do in a situation like that is if we looked at the contract, certainly we would make sure that there were monies that could be used to pay for a contract like that. So then, or pay for those services or her performance. The other, you know, we would be looking for compliance issues, rules, policy, so on and so forth. But then what it would get down to is, you know, for the benefit to the community, you know, best practices, does this make sense? Then in a performance audit, you just sort of lay that out there that, you know, from a performance perspective, from dollars available to be used for the operations of the community college versus this performing arts center, I mean, does that make sense? And so that's really where you would get down to. The first thing we'd be looking for is, again, compliance with laws, rules, regulations, monies, and how they're supposed to be used. Is there any compliance issues, state law or anything like that? But then the other place you go to is in best practices.
And so if, for instance, in this case, I think the Humanities and Fine Arts Center director, Shane Fernando, was telling me yesterday that they've already sold $280,000 in tickets, which is something of a record breaker for this area, I think. If it turns out that ticket sales, projected revenues, more than cover those costs and the center winds up becoming a self-funded operation, which I think is the goal, does that fall within what you would consider to be compliance and appropriate use of government money?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking with North Carolina State Auditor Beth Wood. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org or tweet us at coastlinehqr. And Beth Wood, you do several different kinds of audits, as you were saying at the top of the show. And one of those audits that you do is called a performance audit. Explain what that is and why this seems to be a growing function in your office.
It is a critical function in our office. When you're looking at the checkbook, the financial statements, for example, you really can have money coming in the door, properly accounted for, expenditures properly accounted for, and then the balance left in the bank is the right amount. You can have the bank, the checkbook, everything to be correct, but you spent monies and did you accomplish anything with those dollars? And that's what a performance audit is going after for a program, for a division of state government, for an agency in general. You spent all these taxpayer dollars. What were you trying to accomplish in spending that money and did you accomplish it? Or did you use twice the number of resources that you should have used to come up with the same objective? In some cases, we're looking for, did you really have any measures, any metrics? What were you trying to accomplish? You're spending the money. What were you trying to accomplish with the money? And in a recent performance audit, we found that there weren't even any measures or metrics to be measuring about. They were just spending money. And so, again, these are our hard-earned tax dollars coming into the state of North Carolina. They're being spent. What are you accomplishing with those dollars?
Are those performance audits public?
They absolutely are. On our website, we have a tab for audits/reviews. And when you click on that, you have a chance to look at financial audits, federal grant audits, performance audits, financial-related audits, and investigations. So we have it broken down so you don't have to filter through all the audits that we do. But if you're looking for a particular type and the savings, the inefficient spending, the lost revenues to the state. You'll find that in the performance and the financial related arena.
I'm fairly certain that some of our listeners right now are wanting to know which organization you would have been talking about in this last example of not even having any metrics by which to measure efficiency.
We can talk about who that is.
Who is it?
It was the Division of the Blind at the Department of Health and Human Services. So they have a program by which they take people who are blind and they train them to run vending services. And the rest stops on the side of the road in state buildings, federal buildings, and they're able to earn a living and be a functioning citizen in North Carolina. So they train them, they show them how to do it, and they're supposed to monitor it. And what we found is we have only 77 spots where people can be have these vending operations. We found that there are 325 that have been trained and certified by the state of North Carolina. So 325 minus 77 people that are actually functioning in these areas. And we've spent over $300,000 per person training these people. And yet we don't have a place for them to land to have their own vending operation. When we went to audit this program, we've spent $29 million over a period of years, and we can't tell you how many people they intended to train, how many they intended to give a business to. They're not monitoring and looking at the vending businesses, so those who are not performing well are not being taken out of the business and give it to somebody who will do it right. Their door is wide open for monies to be skimmed off the top because some portion of that money that they earn goes back into the program itself to train others, and the door is wide open for monies to be skimmed off the top before the dollars are reported to the state. So there was just holes big enough to drive a truck through. So we have no idea if the $29 million were spent and accomplished what it should. We don't know if we helped all the blind that we should. We don't know if we have everybody working that we should.
Is there a plan in place to remedy that?
There is. DHHS has a plan, working on a plan to fix this program.
You're listening to Coastline. It's a conversation with North Carolina State Auditor Beth Wood. We're about to go to a brief break, and we'll come up on our last segment. So if you'd like to get your question in, give us a call, 910-343-1138. You're listening to Coastline. Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. And with me in the studio, once again, Beth Wood, North Carolina State Auditor, now serving her second term in office. If you'd like to ask her a question, give us a call at 910-343-1138 or send an email to coastline@whqr.org. And of course, you can always tweet us at @CoastlineHQR. And Beth Wood, we have an anonymous questioner. Again, lots of anonymous questions this show. And this person writes, I teach part-time at Cape Fear Community College. My salary is less than $15 an hour with no benefits. I cannot tell you how discouraged I am when I hear about raises and misappropriation of funds. What would you say to this person?
They have a right to be angry. Again, I just believe, I mean, the state of North Carolina is functioning off of a $44 billion budget, and the community colleges get over $1 billion. And again, if monies are being spent inappropriately, somebody's got to take up that slack. And so for the true operations and the people who are struggling to make a living, you're right, that's not only coming out of your pocket from a taxpayer's perspective, but then if you've got a job in one of these institutions and you're being underpaid, it's really a double whammy.
And related to that question, Jim writes, hate to beat a dead horse, but were these increases and bonuses given to friends of the past president? Were they just given to a few people? Were they given to well-deserved teachers who are grossly underpaid in this region? That's a great question. And will this information be made public at some point in the future?
The raises were given to, I can't say that they were friends of the former president, and can't really go into all of the relationships. But again, that was, the recommendation is supposed to come from the president to the board. And then the board looks at the community colleges as a whole and says, this is how we're going to spend our pot of money this year. So the bottom line was he took away the board's ability to give those raises where they may have been more necessary or not give them at all and keep them in the operations of the community college. And so the point here is that the former president did not leave these decisions up to the board, and the report finds out that they find it interesting that the former president said didn't realize that that's what he was supposed to do. However, in 2014, he did it the right way.
You're saying in 2013, when he gave these raises and promotions without getting board approval, he said he didn't know.
Right.
And then the following year,
he turned right around, and before he gave any raises, before he put it in the annual budget, before he gave any promotions, he received the board approval. And certainly we're in there in 2015. So it wasn't because anybody was raising any red flags from the state auditor's office. This was just the normal operations. One year he didn't do it, said he didn't know he was supposed to, but the next year he does.
One of the problems when you were talking about this particular conclusion in your investigative report, you said on March 8th, 2013, and as a result of a general fund shortfall at the state level, the governor asked state agencies to implement several cost-saving measures. The most pertinent cost-saving measure with regards to the college was to limit compensation increases to only those needed for promotions and reclassifications, where there's clear documentation of increased responsibilities and the expectation that agency accountability and performance will be improved. So in other words, it's not just a question of sliding this past the board and not giving them a chance to decide on it.
But there was a directive from the governor to all of us, state agencies, universities, community colleges. We have a budget shortfall. You're going to have to revert money back to fix that budget shortfall or to fill it in. And so there was a directive from the governor to not give raises and promotions. And pretty much the directive to all of us was, except in cases where it's critical to retaining or you've had to give additional responsibilities to somebody.
And you also broke it out in your report. And I, if I'm remembering correctly, one of the raises was at 18 or 19%. Another one was 14%. I mean, we're not talking about cost of living increases here. We're talking about some pretty hefty raises when other government employees were getting just cost of living increases at the time, or not even that.
We were not getting cost of living increases. There were not raises given to state employees, university, community colleges. And so you're right, these are raises that were being given out at a time, again, when we didn't have the money and there was a directive. It was so bad, we had a directive from the governor not to accept in critical cases.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking with North Carolina State Auditor Beth Wood and Eula from Southport. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Thank you, Rachel. Another really good show.
I've had the
radio turned down, so I don't know if you've addressed this issue. But for the people who did receive raises, have any of them come forward from, I guess, an ethical and a moral standpoint, and knowing that it was wrong, have they decided that they do not want to accept this raise?
Not that I am aware of. That's not to say that it didn't happen, but not that I am aware of.
That's a great question, Eula. Thanks so much for calling in. And we have Bob from Wilmington. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hi. I was curious about the legalities of funding the Arts Center via tax bonds, and how does the Arts Center work with the community college in actually educating students? I would think that money should have gone toward education programs more than an Arts Center.
Bob, that's a good question. Beth Wood, I'm not sure how familiar you are with the funding situation, the bond situation, and you're shaking your head, but voters recently approved bonds, I think twice for Cape Fear Community College. I hope I have that right. And the Humanities and Fine Arts Center, of course, because it's a government-funded institution, was built by this taxpayer money, this bond money. And some people have asked the same question that Bob has asked. How do you justify, how does a brand new Humanities and Fine Arts Center, it's a gorgeous facility, fit with the mission of a community college?
I apologize. That is not a question that I am able to answer today, but I am certainly making notes, and it is an issue that we can take a look at.
Okay, Bob, thanks so much for your call. That is a question that has come up before, and this is speculation here, but if you were to determine that the mission of such a center wasn't an appropriate use of bond money, then what would happen?
Again, that's a hard question. A lot of legalities going into that, and it's just something I'd rather not speculate on or delve into at this point, but certainly we'll take a look into.
Thank you so much. You're listening to Coastline. We're talking with North Carolina State Auditor Beth Wood about the functions of her office, about the recent investigative report done on former CFCC College President Ted Spring. And Beth Wood, you've said that citizen input has so much to do with what's happening in your office right now. And you mentioned earlier an investigation that you had done on one particular department within the Department of Health and Human Services.
Exactly.
How much of your office's functioning does DHHS is a huge organization. What are some of the other components of that you have to stay on top of?
In looking at DHHS, the state of North Carolina receives $23 billion from the federal government, federal grants, in the form of Medicaid and food stamps and monies to build our roads and bridges and monies for clean water and air. But 68% of those federal grants, which again are our tax dollars, are being spent by the Department of Health and Human Services. It is the biggest department in state government. We have another $21 billion in state appropriations. They're our state tax dollars. And DHHS is the second biggest pot of those state tax dollars. So we spend a lot of time over there. $13 billion in Medicaid spending alone, about 10 or 11 from the feds and another $3 billion from our state dollars are being spent in the Medicaid program alone. So my staff is over there auditing the federal grant monies. We're also looking at the integrity of the Medicaid program, who's eligible, who's not, and it is the responsibility of DHHS to determine that the eligibility determinations are being done well. So again, we're following up to make sure that how they do that, they contract a lot of this work out. Are they monitoring their contracts? They're spending hundreds of millions of dollars in contract money. Are they monitoring their contractors as well as they should? We have audits to show that not. And we are looking also at the new computer systems that have been failing since they went live. The NC Track system, which is the system that processes Medicaid payments for 1.5 million participants, 77,000 providers, doctors, dentists, hospitals, in-home healthcare providers, and labs. And we've seen that that computer system was not ready to go live. Our office put out an audit that said the system was not ready to go live, that it would very possible to fail when it tried to go live, and it did. We also are looking at the NC FAST, which is where all the eligibility determinations for women and infant children, TANF, food stamps, Medicaid, they run through this particular system. And of course, if you've been listening to the news, you found that for the food stamps, that people's food stamps or participants' food stamps have been held up for 3 and 4 months. There's such a backlog with this new system that wasn't either properly tested or properly implemented. We're still trying to determine that. But again, hundreds of millions, billions of dollars running through that agency. So we have quite a few teams in there constantly looking at what's going on in that agency.
How many employees do you have in the state auditor's office?
I have 173 employees. I have 150 auditors slash investigators, about 14 investigators, about 18 staff members that perform performance audits, so not very many to do this very critical work.
You're listening to Coastline. We have just a few minutes left in the show, talking with North Carolina State Auditor Beth Wood. And Nick, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
All right, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just had a comment to make regarding the previous caller's suggestion that the legality of the bond payments for the new arts center at the Cape Fear Community College should be questioned. It seems to me that he, and frankly you too, neglected to emphasize that it's not just the arts center. You did say it's the humanities, but you didn't question or emphasize this. It is a teaching building, that the students go there to learn, yes, arts, but also humanities, and that the community college serves in a very important function for bringing students through into the four-year institutions of UNC in general, and that it's not just for things, for a training program, but rather this is an academic facility for the community at large. Plus, of course, the people voted to fund it.
That's right. And Nick, I appreciate your fleshing out that point. And I'm asking the questions. I'm not making the cases here. So I appreciate you doing that. You're talking about the fact that the CFCC function, part of its mission, is as a feeder to UNCW. That's a component.
Well, UNCW, UNC Chapel Hill, and North Carolina State, all of the UNC system. Mm-hmm. The Cape Fear Community College students, they head on to those institutions, and they need to have the academic facilities to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, Nick, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
All right. You're listening to Coastline, talking with North Carolina State Auditor Beth Wood. Beth Wood, when you do find embezzlement within a government-funded organization or some kind of serious financial impropriety, is that typically something that you discover through the audit process or another way?
For those types of situations, the vast majority are a tip, and then we investigate the allegation and then substantiate that there is alleged illegal, inappropriate things that are happening. In that case, we will turn those allegations and our evidence to support what we found over to the SBI, the FBI, or the district attorney, some cases even the Department of Revenue and the IRS, and let them further an investigation, which then may result in indictments and charges.
And do you ever find that financial improprieties are just a lack of understanding about what appropriate protocol is? Or is it a mixed bag, or is it usually lack of education about the right way to do something?
The improprieties is usually intent when, you know, it leads to charges or to be turned over to another authority. But yes, we do run into things that are reportable, but at the same time, it does appear that it was just somebody that didn't know the proper way or didn't understand completely what they should be doing. So we do run into that too.
And so in the case of this sector of DHHS, this department that had the vending machine program for blind people, was that a case of people just not really understanding how they needed to go about doing this in an efficient way? Was that a teaching opportunity?
It was definitely a teaching opportunity. However, we are moving to more of, if I give you this money, what are you going to do with it? And then how did you measure against that? And that is a practice that back when this program was started, it was not necessarily the practice. And so this is new to state government.
That's this edition of Coastline. I'd like to thank North Carolina State Auditor Beth Wood for joining us today. Thanks also to you, our listeners, and those of you who called and emailed your comments. Join us for Coastline every Wednesday at 12:06 here on HQR News 91.3 FM. Coastline is produced by Isabel Shepherd. Our technical director is Ken Campbell. Our webmaster is Melissa Stone. If you missed part of this show, we'll post it on our website, whqr.org, later today, or download the podcast from iTunes. Thanks again for listening. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.